All right, how you doing, Who Dat Nation and WWL listeners? I'm Jeff Nowak. I'll be taking you up till 8 p.m. here on Sports Talk. We're also live on YouTube, and I'm all over the place. But we're going to be spending this last hour talking about the Saints. We're going to have Greg Allman, who covers the NFC South for Fox Sports. This first segment, I want to go through the injury report. Final segment, I want to dunk on some power rankings. I set that up. I set up the ring last week. I went around and I made sure that there was a top rope for me to jump off, so that this week, when the Saints inevitably proved all these people wrong, I was able to just power bomb them. But this first segment, I want to go through the injury report. I know we did that earlier in the show, but I wasn't here for it. So I want to talk about it too. And we're going to start with the Saints, because the Eagles, and I have some thoughts about the Eagles side of this equation. I'm not a huge fan of it, but we're going to start with the Saints. And so there's 10 players who appeared on the Saints injury report. I think, you know, while that number might sound daunting, I think they are actually in very good health situation relative to where they could be or they have been in recent years. So we'll start. Two players are listed on the injury report, but were full participants. That's Jalen Ford has a hamstring injury, and wide receiver Rashid Shaheed with a hip injury. Now, Jalen Ford's been dealing with that hamstring injury. He injured the other hamstring early in camp, and then he injured that hamstring late in camp. He's been working his way back. Michael Hodges, the linebacker's coach, has been very complimentary of him. They kept him around even though he was hurt, which tells you that they do think very highly of him, who's a fifth-round pick. So hopefully you're able to get him back. With some of the depth at linebacker, like last week you called up Isaiah Stallbird. I don't know if you'll continue to do that if you feel like Jalen can get out there, but that's where he is. Rashid Shaheed, that hip injury kind of developed. I mean, he dealt with a finger issue last week. He had a toe issue earlier in camp. I believe he had a hamstring in camp as well. So he's just kind of working his way around with the injuries. I think the goal is to maybe have every body part listed at some point throughout the season. Either way, full participant, not something to be super concerned with there. Good news. Cornerback Marshon Lattimore returned to practice today. This is the first time since he went out of the Panthers game in the opener with a hamstring issue. Dennis Allen said after the game that he probably could have played if they wanted to push it. Marshon wanted to play. He said that Marshon was probably pretty ticked off at him that he didn't let him play. But I think having Khalid McKinstry there, feeling confident with Paulson Adebo and Alante Taylor, you have the luxury of saying, hey, we're going to play it safe. We don't want a potential one-week injury to turn into 2 to 3 to 4 week injury. So we're going to figure it out. And they did. They played very well. Kool-Aid played very well in his starting debut. And so now you feel really good about where you are if you lose one of these guys going forward. Either way, Marshon getting in limited work is positive. You also had limited offensive tackle rookie Taliese Fuaga with a back issue. Safety Tyrann Mathieu with a heel issue. It's something he's been dealing with for a while. He was also on the injury report last week with the same heel issue. And then wide receiver Cedric Wilson with an abdomen issue. He went out in the first half against the Cowboys, did return. So that's a good sign that, you know, it's something he can manage and work through. Taliese Fuaga, I talked to him after the game. That's going to be one that, you know, hopefully it's not all season. That's what I get concerned with when you're trying to play through a back issue is – there's really no way to fix a back issue other than to kind of chill with it, you know? And so hopefully they're maybe able to manage it throughout the week. I do worry that at some point, if you don't just shut him down and let him recover, that it continues to be a thing all season long. We'll see. He did a good job of managing it in that game. He didn't sit down basically the entire game. I didn't see him sitting on the bench once. He was standing the whole time. He had his back. He had a wrap on it, like a heat wrap, to keep it loose. He was on the bike. You know, he battled with it. You know, those as someone who's dealt with back stuff, like you, it's not, if anyone is listening who has dealt with back issues, lower back issues, you understand exactly what he's going through, right? Like, it's really stiff in the morning. Once it loosens up a little bit, you're okay, but it's always there. You're always thinking about it. Now they have much better, you know, medicine and treatment than I do at home. So hopefully they can manage that. But it's still something that, you know, you kind of just have to look at throughout the course of the season and say, okay, how can we manage this? Can we get it to the bye week? Do you have to work on it? Either way, that's something to watch. The final four on this list, the four DMPs, two of them we've known about for a while. They're both calf injuries. They've both been out since the preseason. They both got hurt late in the preseason. Like, we're talking about final practices before week one. DeMarco Jackson, linebacker, DMP. Colin Saunders, defensive tackle, DMP. Then tight end. They're calling him a tight end, so I'm going to call him a tight end. Taysom Hill, dealing with a chest issue. He left during the game, actually went to an area hospital to get imaging done, which, you know, you hear that, and you're like, man, okay, they're concerned that this is something legitimate. It sounds like he avoided anything like that, any type of pec, like torn pec, stuff like that. Anytime you hear chest, you think like, okay, it could be a potential season-ending thing. Doesn't sound like that's the case. He didn't practice today, but DA expressed confidence that hopefully he could get out there at some point this week for limited work, and you'll have to kind of see how he handles it throughout the course of the week. Final name, and this is the only one that surprised me, really, offensive tackle Landon Young, DMP, with a foot issue. Didn't really get a ton of work in that game, even though you went in thinking, oh, he might start if Taliese Fuaga can't go. He's dealt with foot issues in the past. He had a really nasty turf toe injury against the Eagles in his rookie season, and that cost him a lot of time. So you hope it's nothing like that. I think if it was a turf toe injury, they would have said toe. So we'll have to see. But there's other stuff that can go wrong with your feet when you're a lineman. Your feet are important. So that is something to look at. But either way, that's where we are. And yeah, Colin, how you feeling about that?
Not too bad. You did kind of mention at the start, though, no Eagles players on there?
Oh, there are Eagles players
there
on
there. Okay, I thought I saw there wasn't any.
Well, the initial one they sent out, and this is why I think the Eagles might be gaming the system here, trying to game the system a little bit. Because here's the thing. They didn't practice today. They played on Monday night. So this today's injury report is an estimate. They were really late in getting it out.
Is there like a league requirement that they had to do one?
I think, you know, typically you get these by about 3 p.m. and they're in the Eastern time zone. So by the time they sent it out, we're talking like 6 p.m. by the time anyone here got
really?
That information. Yeah.
Was, like at 3 o'clock, I was telling Mike off the air, I was like, man, the Eagles, like they had nobody out. But we just heard A.J. Brown last night.
A.J. Brown is dealing with a hamstring injury. He was a DMP. So they had two players on this list. Two. Okay. A.J. Brown, DMP. Johnny Wilson, another wide receiver, DMP with a hamstring issue. Here's the thing. If you're a player that would have missed today with an injury, you have to be on this list. Those are the rules.
I was going to say, two being DNPs and like it's week two, like not even having like a single limited or something like that. But then again, they didn't have practice.
And so what happens when four or five players end up being added to this injury report throughout the week?
So, the point to be made at the end of the day is, you know, obviously we'll keep an eye tomorrow on the injury report for the Saints, but we'll be very keen on what happens with the Eagles. I'm assuming they practice tomorrow. So, like, we'd be really, you know, don't get caught off guard if we come out tomorrow and say, like, oh, the Eagles injury report jumped from two people to 10 or something like that.
Well, I don't think it'll be that significant, but my point is the injury report is supposed to be information. It is not supposed to be used to try to gain an advantage.
Yeah.
Right? That's why when Joe Burrow or when Jordan Mason, the running back for the 49ers, I knew on Friday that I was going to be the starter, and then Christian McCaffrey was kind of up in the air, and he didn't get added to the injury report until Saturday.
Yep.
Like, there's a reason that's a problem. It's because you're supposed to be open with your injuries. And so if five players get added to this injury report tomorrow, what the explanation can't be, well, we just didn't know, right? And so we'll see. But that's really sketchy to me that it came out late and they have two players on there.
Call them on.
This is the NFL.
Be serious.
You're telling me that you only have two players that might have even been limited? You have the Saints listing players with injuries that their full participation. Like, that's how it's supposed to be. If you're dealing with an injury, you're supposed to tell people.
That's what I was asking you about, because I was like, Shaheed and Ford, I was like, I didn't remember them getting out of the game or anything like that, so I was kind of surprised
All I'm saying is I'm watching that, and if five players get added tomorrow, I'm calling foul, because that's not how it's supposed to work.
Okay, with the two players on there, Brown, he'd said a couple weeks, it's not enough for him to go on IR, correct?
Well, I mean, it depends on what they feel about it. I mean, hamstring injuries are tough. He told Susie Colbert.
So it was like, he was confident that he wasn't going to play this week. He obviously didn't play Monday night.
He said a couple weeks, so we'll see. I don't know. I don't know if a player is really the most.
Would you want to hear from the horse's mouth? I mean,
no, because a lot of times players lie. A lot of times players don't know that. Like, if you ask Michael Thomas when he was coming back, he would say, "I'm playing today," and it would be like, "Actually, you're out for the season."
Yeah, so it's
they're not always the most conscientious person in that situation of like, yeah, he might feel like, hey, I could play next week, but the doctors would be like, dude, this is like a 6 to 8 week injury. We told you this. And he'd be like, no, but I'm a superhero, you know? So there you go. But either way, that's where we are. That's the injury report. We're going to hit the break here. We're going to come back with Greg Allman. We're going to talk about the NFC South because that's what he covers for Fox Sports, the Bucks, the Falcons, the Panthers, and the talk of the town, the Saints. We're going to get into that. I'm Jeff Nowak, Colin Steele over there. We're taking you up till 8 p.m. here on WWL. Keep it locked on the Big 870. All right, coming back in on Sports Talk. I'm not Steve Geller. I am Jeff Nowak, taking you up till 8 p.m. here on WWL, AMFM.com, and the Odyssey app. We're also live on YouTube. We're going to bring in Greg Allman on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. He covers the NFC South for Fox Sports. The NFC South, suddenly a really interesting division to talk about, unless you're a Panthers fan. Then you want to go hide somewhere. How you doing, Greg? You having a good night?
I am doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. Now, Greg, you know, obviously just kind of what is your initial read on how the first 2 weeks have gone in the NFC South? Because I think, you know, outside of the Panthers, which, you know, I think people kind of expected them to struggle a little bit. Obviously, benching Bryce Young is maybe not something that we expected to see. But by and large, with the Falcons even at 1-1, Saints at 2-0, Bucks at 2-0, is this kind of a division that suddenly people have to take notice of and say, like, wow, they, you know, you talk about divisions that might get 2-3 teams in the playoffs. You have to kind of take this division seriously.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those where, you know, all three wins this weekend are big road wins against teams that are, you know, seen by most as playoff teams. So, I mean, you go to Detroit, you win. You go to Philadelphia, you win. You know, it's one of those where, and I think even, you know, more than anything else, it's just, you know, you go to Dallas, you win. I don't think any of those three were expected. So, you know, that's probably where in Atlanta probably stumbled in week one and lost a game most thought they would win. I think all three of those are probably one more game than people expected them to. Carolina, like you said, is still Carolina. I mean, if anything, they're worse than expected. But the other three, I mean, that's a strong weekend to have for any division.
Yeah, what is your read on kind of the Bucks and that situation they have down there with Baker? Because I think, generally speaking, there was question of, okay, how much of this was Dave Canales versus how much of this is Baker Mayfield kind of finding his way with a team? You know, Geno Smith, obviously, Dave kind of resurrected his career as well, and that's gone beyond Dave. So how have you seen kind of that new offense under Liam Cohen kind of take the stage there? Because it doesn't seem like they've missed a step other than, you know, I guess it hasn't missed a step, but to me, like, the biggest difference last year, it seemed like Chris Godwin wasn't a huge part of the equation, and this year he seems to be way more emphasized.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like, you know, all four teams in the division have new offensive coordinators and largely brand new play callers. So I think there was always the concern, you know, which of those four would take, which would have an offense that looked good from the start. And right now, I mean, so far, the answer is Liam Cohen in Tampa and Clint Kubiak in New Orleans. And they both come out of the gates really clicking as if they'd done this for a long time, as if the players have been in the system for a while. You know, I think for the Bucs, in terms of going from Canales to Cohen, I felt better about Cohen than I probably did about Canales a year ago, just because Dave Canales had never been a coordinator, had never been a play caller, was taking a big step forward. Cohen has done this before. He's done it under other offensive coaches. So there's that, you know, anytime you have a new system, you just don't know how well it'll show up right away in terms of fluency and mastery and everybody being on the same page. And I thought the Bucks, you know, I thought their first three games kind of played out very predictable in that you had home games against two rookie quarterbacks in Washington and Denver with Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix, and you had a road game at Detroit, which is probably one of their three toughest games of the season. So it really should have been win-loss-win the way it goes. So the fact that they can, you know, even shorthanded go up to Detroit and win definitely exceeded expectations. You know, it probably spoke to Detroit missing a lot of opportunities, but I think the Bucks' defense played a role in them doing that.
Greg, we had you on a couple weeks ago, and you were kind of talking about how at the end of the year, at the end of the day, you know, these teams in the NFC South, whoever comes out on top, you know, back then it was before the season started, so Saints weren't too much in that conversation, we would have hoped, and then there was mainly Bucks and a big question mark on what the Falcons would be able to do, but at the end of the day, there wasn't a lot of expectations for what these teams could do in the late season. Yes, we're only 2 weeks in, but has... you know, have the goalposts been shifted a little bit? Have they been moved with regards to if you think any of these teams, Bucks, obviously not the Panthers, could make any sort of noise come playoff time?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that any of the three are more than like a one-win playoff team. You know, if any of these three were to get to the conference championship game, that'd be pretty strong. You know, I think people still think of the top tier of the NFC being the Niners and the Lions. You know, maybe the Packers if Love is healthy, that kind of thing. But they're in that next group. You know, I think the Cowboys and the Eagles have both taken a step back now, so they're not necessarily one of the dominant teams. But I mean, again, if you win the NFC South, you get a home game. So, as the Bucs showed last year, that can go a long way towards getting you to the next round. Now, inevitably, you're going to have to go on the road at some point. You know, I mean, the Bucs went to Detroit in the playoffs last year and lost. They went there Sunday and won. So, I don't know that anything has been so resounding that you'd say, "Oh, they're you know, potential Super Bowl team or the Saints." Even though the Saints have scored 47 and 44. You kind of have to validate that more over a month or more, I guess, to really start getting in that conversation.
Yeah, what is kind of, yeah, I mean, you kind of hit on it there. When you watch a team score 47 and 44 points, you know, it's just, it's hard to look at that team with any kind of objectivity in the sense of, like, it's not going to be, this isn't LSU in 2019. Like, they are going to get challenged at some point.
Right.
And what happens then? Like, when things aren't going perfectly, how do you handle it? You know, where do you see that? Because, like, I'm having trouble contextualizing it with another example of, like, because every example right. I look at, these teams went to the Super Bowl, right? All the teams you look at yeah. from, like, 2000 that scored 40 points in their first two games, it's like, oh, the Saints in 2009, the Colts in 2006, the Broncos in 2014. Yeah, the Cowboys in 1971, as Colin says. You know, where do you see that? Because it's a difficult kind of bridge to cross of, like, okay, I want to get excited, but I don't want to go overboard. Where are you?
Right. I think the opener against Carolina at home, that's kind of one of those games they could almost score what they wanted to. I think there's probably a decent amount of teams against Carolina on that day that could score 35, 40 points without straining too much. Now, going to Dallas and scoring touchdowns on your first six possessions is outstanding. I mean, if they were looking for validation, that did that in a big way. To get a couple interceptions off Dak, to, you know, just own the game start to finish. Kamara running the ball well. I forget what the number is, but I mean, four touchdowns is the most anyone has ever scored against the Cowboys ever, matching, I think, three, four other guys. So it's one of those where they've done everything they can to this point. Now, can they do it again with the Eagles? You know, they're going to get an Eagles team that's probably a little upset, looking to rebound.
I bet, yeah.
They do it again there. And again, an Eagles defense that looks suspect and questionable still. So still plenty of opportunity to score a lot of points. But if they do it again, if they're 3-0 and they beat the Eagles, that really puts them more now. You know, you think about these power rankings, and I think everybody has their where they start at and where you want to put them after two wins. And once you've beaten Dallas convincingly, you have to put them ahead of Dallas in your power ranking. So whatever lingering impressions you have of the Eagles, if you had confidence that they were a playoff team or a division champ, if the Saints can take care of business and win convincingly there, they're now right there in that conversation. I mean, nobody else is going to be, at least on the NFC side, having those quality wins. I mean, if the Bucs win Sunday, they're beating Denver and another rookie quarterback, so it only carries so much weight.
Yeah, I do think that's kind of my takeaway. And you know, I watched the Saints for two games very closely, right? So I feel like I have a pretty good idea of what went on. And then I go and watch some other teams, and I'm just like, you know, offense around the league is not blowing anyone off the field.
Right.
And I don't know how much of that is, okay, people don't quite have a read on Clint Kubiak yet. How much of that is this offense really gelling? But the team I'm interested in terms of, okay, I still have no idea of how good this offense can be or not, is the Falcons. And Kirk
right.
Cousins, like, I watch him play, and I'm just like, even by Kirk Cousins' standards, the dude's not moving. I don't know if he just is afraid to move. There was a play in the red zone at the end of the first half the other night where there was guys open. All he had to do was take like a step to the right and extend for maybe a half second, and he's got mm-hmm. a touchdown. Instead, he airmails it out of the back of the end zone. I'm like, this is a guy who's not – I mean, obviously, you don't want to take a sack there and the clock runs out, But it's just like that's a tough way to win in the NFL. If you're not willing to try to extend a play even in the pocket, I'm just curious, where right. do you see that Falcons offense now, and what's your read on Kirk at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they look better Sunday, but I mean, against Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh looks to have a decent defense. You know, your defense keeps Pittsburgh out of the end zone the whole game. You lose to a team that doesn't score a touchdown, your offense didn't have a good day. So that's a rough start.
Unless you're the Giants. Unless you're the Giants.
Right. Giants did it well. The 7 field goals is pretty strong. Absent that, it's hard to do it. And then to see them, I mean, they won Monday, and it does a lot for Kirk Cousins for him to get that win and go whatever it was, 5 for 6 for 70 yards in less than 2 minutes and just lead them down the field. Easy touchdown, boom. I mean, it's stealing a win, but it's still getting an important win. Because if they don't get that, they're 0-2. They have the Chiefs on Sunday in Atlanta, which means you're likely looking at 0-3. And that's a hole that not many teams will dig out of. So I think they've definitely saved themselves that storyline. But they're not going to beat the Chiefs probably with 22 points on Sunday. They've got to click at a much higher rate. And Cousins has to, too. He can't wait for the last drive to make plays and move the ball consistently. They could do that, but I still haven't seen enough to say, oh, wow, this Falcons offense is as advertised.
All right, we're talking to Greg Allman, NFC South reporter for Fox Sports. I only got one more question, but I'm going to put you on the spot. And so you watch 2 weeks of NFC South football. How many games do you have to win this division? Where would you put it right now? Because I think over the last couple of years, you would have said, hey, if you get the double-digit wins, you should take this division going away. I don't know. I'm starting to think you might have to get up toward 11, maybe 12. Where are you at?
12 would be impressive. There's still a lot of tough teams on the schedule, these three that are doing well. So I would say I still think if I were to guess the most likely outcome, it's like two teams at 10-7. But no, it's certainly not to say, I mean, I forget. New Orleans, I think, has four 0-2 teams still on New Orleans' schedule. So that's, again, if you're 2-0 and they're 0-2, you know, even if you're on the road, you'll be favored. So that's four. That gets you to six right there. If you go 3-2 in your other division games, now you're 9 wins, okay? And then all it takes is whatever is left, 4 other games, and, you know, 2 out of 2, that gets to 11. So, yeah, 11's in play. I still think it's kind of like you look at the Rams are 0-2 right now. By the time the Saints get them, are they healthy? Are they better? We don't know that right now. So some of these 0-2 teams will be a mirage, and others will be a bad team that don't have it. These AFC North teams that are 0-2 right now. Ravens and Cincinnati are both going to be much better teams than they look right now. So I don't know. Like I said, if I were to guess right now, there's not going to be a 9-8. I feel good about that. That's speaking high praise for NFC South champions, that it takes 10 wins. But I think it's the conversation now starts at 10. And if you get to 11, now you're talking about seeding. You're talking about maybe a second home game. That's dreamy stuff for this division right now.
For sure. You know, I lied. I have one more question. And I did want to ask you about Bryce Young and that situation with the Panthers. And, you know, other than Andy Dalton being the new Ryan Fitzpatrick and that everywhere he goes, he eventually ends up the starter. You know, what is
right.
does that see? Are they done with Bryce? I mean, I can't imagine they are, in the sense of you drafted him number one overall 2 years ago. You gave up a ton to get him. I can't imagine you pull the rug under him completely. But where do you think they're at with Bryce? How does he get that job back if he does? Or do you kind of just, if you're the Panthers, kind of have to reset? Where do you see that?
Yeah, it's baffling for me in that I don't know what the Panthers even root for in this scenario.
Right.
In that if you win with Andy Dalton, it's great that you have a 37-year-old quarterback that's better than the number one overall pick that you drafted. But all that really means is that you're picking lower when you try to pick the next quarterback in April. So I think for them to give a longer look to Bryce Young, even if it means fewer wins, also probably leads them to be in better position to make a better choice the next time they have to pick a quarterback. If they're sitting there at 5-12 and picking 7th or 8th, now you're going to get the third quarterback in what looks to be an underwhelming class of quarterbacks. They don't have a ton of cap space where you can't go out and get some amazing quarterback like the Saints and the Falcons have done in the last 2 years. So I'm not sure what the ideal scenario is. I mean, I think it's possible that I think Dalton's going to breathe more life into this offense than it's had in the first two games. Andy Dalton will throw it 40 times and he'll give you 300 yards and three touchdowns and two picks. And that's a lot more exciting. That's a better product on the field than what they've put out there. I think they've scored 10 or less in 8 of their last 10 games, which is just not watchable. Yeah. So I think you can't even really evaluate the people around Bryce Young if there's so little offense being done at any level. But so Andy Dalton does that for you. You can see what these young receivers and tight ends and all those things can do, but it's not necessarily better for the franchise as a whole. So that's kind of where I stand. I'll be curious if Andy Dalton plays well and doesn't get hurt. There's not an easy path to, you know, neatly getting Bryce Young back in there and saying, hey, let's give it another shot. It's kind of like getting back with an ex you broke up with almost. You can do it. It doesn't always end up working out well.
That kind of sounds like when Andy Dalton was here. I was saying a lot of the same things. but hey, it does set up a pretty awesome Andy Dalton revenge arc in week 9 against the Saints. So that's going to be appointment viewing. But Greg Allman, NFC South reporter for Fox Sports, thanks so much for the time, man. You have a good one.
All right, you guys take care.
All right. Good stuff. Went around the NFC South, and I am pumped. If when Andy Dalton walks into this building, the Red Rifle, it's going to be funny. He has played against the Saints twice since being the Panthers' backup, but those were very negative scenarios. And one of them was I think they put him in to sneak it in Carolina last year in week 2, and that was just weird. But all right, I'm Jeff Nowak, Colin Steele behind the glass. We're taking you up till 8 p.m. here on Sports Talk. I want to do some do a Captain Insano move on some power rankings really quick to close out this show. Keep it locked on WWL. And we're back on Sports Talk, WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app and YouTube. We're going live on YouTube. And as promised, like I said, I spent all last Tuesday setting up the ring and putting up the turnbuckles and climbing up to make sure it would support my weight so that this week when the power rankings came out and the Saints dominated the Cowboys like we all knew they would, I would be able to dive headfirst and powerbomb all of these power rankings. And man, it worked out well. It worked out in my favor. So let's go through them. All of these power rankings were these outlets who supposedly know what they're talking about universally decided the Saints were a bottom 10 team. And I say that because every single power ranking I get to in these, and I don't go through every single power ranking. I go through the ones that I found and I collected. And I feel like that's a pretty good smattering. It's not like I'm looking at Joe Schmoes from this blog in Kansas City. I'm looking at ESPN, NFL.com, all that stuff. So let's start with ESPN. The ESPN had them at 25. They are now they started at 25. They moved up to 21 last week, and this week they're up to number 9. So they climbed 14 spots in 1 week. ESPN doesn't really break them down. They give you a note. Kat Terrell from ESPN wrote the note, but she didn't do the power rankings. So I'm not going to give them too much grief. Let's go. NFL.com. They started the Saints at number 28 in their power rankings. Last week, after 2 weeks ago, the Panthers lost to the Saints by 37 points, and the powers that be at NFL.com felt that only merited moving up 4 spots to 24th. So that means when they bumped them up to number 8 this week, they climbed 16 spots. And here's the thing. They at least admit that starting the Saints at 28 was dumb, but they're still looking at it as, hey, I still don't understand what's happening. How could they have moved up this far? And it's like, no, the issue isn't that the Saints are exceeding expectations that everyone should have had. The issue is that you set your expectations so low because you weren't paying attention. All right, moving forward. Pro Football Talk. I think we should go check the tapes and see if maybe Mike Florio got hit in the eye with a bag of beads or something at a Mardi Gras parade. Because for some reason, he's just mad. They started the Saints at number 24. They moved up one spot after beating the Panthers by 37 to 23. And this week, they're up to 10th at 13. But his write-up is, it's been easy so far. We'll learn a lot more about the Saints when adversity inevitably makes an appearance. That's your takeaway? They go and beat the Cowboys, and suddenly it's like, oh, well, they just didn't have to face anything difficult. All right, good stuff, Florio. All right, CBS Sports. Start him at 27th. This week, they're up to 6th. They moved up to 25th after beating the Panthers. Meanwhile, keep in mind, they had the Bucs at number 6 overall in their power rankings. And my thing at the time was like, if you can't explain to me why these two teams are 25 spots apart, then you're just making stuff up. And wouldn't you know it, this week the Saints are up to number 6 and the Bucs are at number 4. All right. The sporting news, they had the Saints at number 27. This is the lowest I've seen them come up to, and they had them at 14th. They moved up to 20th last week, then up to 14th this week. And they say, the Saints marched into Dallas and took control with a big play passing from Derek Carr and dynamic playmaking from Alvin Kamara. That made things so much easier for a still solid Dennis Allen defense. 14th. Here's the thing, like, explain to me why this is a mid-team if you're going to say they like winning games by these record margins is not does not merit any attention whatsoever. Anyway, it's the classic, like, I'd rather move them up gradually, and so by the point that we get to mid-season and everyone's kind of consensus that this is a solid team, this is a upper middle tier team, right? I still don't put them in like the top 5 personally, but I do think they're at the top of that middle tier. And the top teams in that middle tier can contend. And we'll see how it goes. We'll see where they kind of go from here. But they're not the 14th. Some of the teams ahead of the Saints in that power ranking. Steelers are at number 4. Chargers are at number 5. The Eagles, a team that we watched on Monday, lose to the Falcons. They are at number 7. The Ravens, an 0-2 team, are at number 9. And then the Jets are 11th. So, I don't know. Do with that information what you will. The last one we go through, Fox Sports. Again, they had the Saints at number 28. 28! 28! They're now at number 9. And they say, it's amazing what the right coaching can do. The Saints offense is, by and large, the same group of players that often struggle to score more than 20 points in a game in 2023. With Clint Kubiak calling the plays, they look like fire-breathing monsters. After demolishing Dallas, we have to allow for the possibility that New Orleans is legit. And this is a perfect example of, like, I decided this last year, and I never even bothered to look again. Because even that sentence, struggle to score 20 points, look at the final 5 games of their season in 2023. They averaged 29 points, 1-4 their final 5 games. And our take is still, they couldn't even score 20 points last year. Anyway, Saints at number 9 in their power rankings. So, I don't know. I had a good time with this. And my issue is, like, I think it kind of needs to be studied how the groupthink that led to everyone, every single one of these rankings deciding, hey, this is universally a bottom some odd team. Because here's the thing. If you're going to go out there and do power rankings and you have a team moving up 20-something spots in your rankings in 2 weeks, I think it's probably time to just hand over the sticks to somebody else. Because clearly you're not very good at this. But all right, that's my spiel on the power rankings. We're going to hit one more break. We're going to come back. I'm Jeff Nowak. This is WWL. This is taking you up till 8 p.m. on WWL Radio. I'll try to remember how to talk in the break. Keep it locked on WWL. And we're back on WWL. Let's go through some texts rapid fire before we get out of here. We got 3953. Andy Dalton is now, he's not the Red Rifle. He's the Red Raffle. Because he's full of giveaways and everyone is a winner. He's also, you know, he also has the winning raffle ticket because he keeps getting starting jobs when he probably doesn't deserve them.
You see that stat about him and Rodgers and about how he's had like three, since Rodgers' last 300-yard game, Dalton's had 3 of them for 3 different teams?
Yeah, yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
And it's like, you hear that and you're like, I don't know.
He did it for the Saints.
Is that a testament to Dalton's supremacy or Rodgers just not doing
much? Here's the thing. I feel like 300-yard passing games used to be a symbol of this quarterback is playing very well, and now it's a symbol of you probably lost that game. Right? Because it means you couldn't run the ball. It means you were throwing the ball 40-something times and you were trying to come back. Like, it just doesn't, this is not a passing league anymore. It's a passing league when you're behind. It's a passing league when you're bad.
300 is not the new 400.
300 is the new, there you go. We also got a text. What happened to the undrafted tight end from Colorado State? He's still here. Just not doing much. You know, you have 2 healthy tight ends. We're gonna keep it going. Man, Kubiak is the difference. For all the Saints fans dreaming of a Lombardi trophy, there's only week two. I remember 1993. Wow. We started 5-0 and finished 8-8. That's tough. That's tough. I don't remember 1993. I was 3 years old.
Staying humble, baby.
Yeah, stay humble. Stay humble. Stay humble. But all right, y'all. I'm Jeff Nowak. This has been WWL Sports Talk. Cullen Steele. Thanks, everyone. Hoot at. I'm out. Be easy, y'all. And we're back on Sports Talk, WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app and YouTube. We're going live on YouTube. And as promised, like I said, I spent all last Tuesday setting up the ring and putting up the turnbuckles and climbing up to make sure it would support my weight so that this week when the power rankings came out and the Saints dominated the Cowboys, like we all knew they would, I would be able to dive headfirst and powerbomb all of these power rankings. And man, it worked out well. It worked out in my favor. So let's go through them. Let's go through them. All of these power rankings were these outlets who supposedly know what they're talking about universally decided the Saints were a bottom 10 team. And I say that because every single power ranking I get to in these, and I don't go through every single power ranking. I go through the ones that I found and I collected. And I feel like that's a pretty good smattering. It's not like I'm looking at Joe Schmoes from this blog in Kansas City. I'm looking at ESPN, NFL.com, all that stuff. So let's start with ESPN. The ESPN had them at 25. They are now at, they started at 25. They moved up to 21 last week, and this week they're up to number 9. So they climbed 14 spots in 1 week. ESPN doesn't really break them down. They give you a note. Kat Terrell from ESPN wrote the note, but she didn't do the power rankings. So I'm not going to give them too much grief. Let's go. NFL.com. They started the Saints at number 28 in their power rankings. In their power rankings. Last week, after 2 weeks ago, the Panthers lost to the Saints by 37 points, and the powers that be at NFL.com felt that only merited moving up four spots to 24th. So that means when they bumped them up to number 8 this week, they climbed 16 spots. And here's the thing. They at least admit that starting the Saints at 28 was dumb, but they're still looking at it as, hey, I still don't understand what's happening. How could they have moved up this far? And it's like, no, the issue isn't that the Saints are exceeding expectations that everyone should have had. The issue is that you set your expectations so low because you weren't paying attention. All right, moving forward. Pro Football Talk. I think there's a point. I think we should go check the tapes and see if maybe Mike Florio got hit in the eye with a bag of beads or something at a Mardi Gras parade. Because for some reason, he's just mad. They started the Saints at number 24. They moved up one spot after beating the Panthers by 37 to 23. And this week, they're up to 10th at 13. But his write-up is, it's been easy so far. We'll learn a lot more about the Saints when adversity inevitably makes an appearance. That's your takeaway? That's your takeaway? They go and beat the Cowboys, and suddenly it's like, oh, well, they just didn't have to face anything difficult. All right, good stuff, Florio. All right, CBS Sports. Start him at 27th. This week, they're up to 6th. They moved up to 25th after beating the Panthers. Meanwhile, keep in mind, they had the Bucs at number 6 overall in their power rankings. And my thing at the time was like, if you can't explain to me why these two teams are 25 spots apart, then you're just making stuff up. And wouldn't you know it, this week, the Saints are up to number 6 and the Bucs are at number 4. All right. The sporting news, they had the Saints at number 27. This is the lowest I've seen them come up to, and they had them at 14th. They moved up to 20th last week, then up to 14th this week. And they say, the Saints marched into Dallas and took control with a big play passing from Derek Carr and dynamic playmaking from Alvin Kamara. That made things so much easier for a still solid Dennis Allen defense. 14th. Here's the thing, like, explain to me why this is a mid team if you're going to say they like winning games by these record margins does not merit any attention whatsoever. Anyway, it's the classic like I'd rather move them up gradually, and so by the point that we get to midseason and everyone's kind of consensus that this is a solid team, this is a upper middle tier team, right? I still don't put them in like the top 5 personally, but I do think they're at the top of that middle tier. And the top teams in that middle tier can contend. And we'll see how it goes. We'll see where they kind of go from here. But they're not the 14th. Some of the teams ahead of the Saints in that power ranking. Steelers are at number 4. Chargers are at number 5. The Eagles, a team that we watched on Monday, lose to the Falcons. They are at number 7. The Ravens, an 0-2 team, are at number 9. And then the Jets are 11th. So, I don't know. Do with that information what you will. The last one we go through, Fox Sports. Again, they had the Saints at number 28. 28! 28! They're now at number 9. And they say, it's amazing what the right coaching can do. The Saints' offense is, by and large, the same group of players that often struggled to score more than 20 points in a game in 2023. With Clint Kubiak calling the plays, they look like fire-breathing monsters. After demolishing Dallas, we have to allow for the possibility that New Orleans is legit. And this is a perfect example of, like, I decided this last year, and I never even bothered to look again. Because even that sentence, struggle to score 20 points, look at the final 5 games of their season in 2023. They averaged 29 points, 1-4 their final 5 games. And our take is still, they couldn't even score 20 points last year. Anyway, Saints at number 9 in their power rankings. So, I don't know. I had a good time with this. And my issue is, like, I think it kind of needs to be studied how the groupthink that led to every single one of these rankings deciding, hey, this is universally a bottom some odd team. Because here's the thing. If you're going to go out there and do power rankings and you have a team moving up 20-something spots in your rankings in 2 weeks, I think it's probably time to just hand over the sticks to somebody else. Because clearly you're not very good at this. But all right, that's my spiel on the power rankings. We're going to hit one more break. We're going to come back. I'm Jeff Nowak. This is WWL. I don't know. This is taking you up till 8 p.m. on WWL Radio. I'll try to remember how to talk in the break. Keep it locked on WWL. And we're back on WWL. Let's go through some texts rapid fire before we get out of here. We got 3953. Andy Dalton is now, he's not the Red Rifle. He's the Red Raffle. Because he's full of giveaways and everyone is a winner. He's also, you know, he also has the winning raffle ticket because he keeps getting starting jobs when he probably doesn't deserve them.
You see that stat about him and Rodgers and about how he's had like three, since Rodgers' last 300-yard game, Dalton's had 3 of them for 3 different teams?
Yeah, yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
And it's like, you hear that and you're like, I don't know.
He did it for the Saints.
Is that a testament to Dalton's supremacy or Rodgers just not doing much?
Here's the thing. I feel like 300-yard passing games used to be a symbol of this quarterback is playing very well, and now it's a symbol of you probably lost that game. Right? Because it means you couldn't run the ball. It means you were throwing the ball 40-something times and you were trying to come back. Like, it just doesn't, this is not a passing league anymore. It's a passing league when you're behind. It's a passing league when you're bad.
300 is not the new 400.
300 is the new, there you go. We also got a text. What happened to the undrafted tight end from Colorado State? Still here. Just not doing much. You know, you have 2 healthy tight ends. We're gonna keep it going. Man, Kubiak is the difference. For all the Saints fans dreaming of a Lombardi trophy, there's only week 2. I remember 1993. Wow. We started 5-0 and finished 8-8. That's tough. That's tough. I don't remember 1993. I was 3 years old.
Staying humble, baby.
Yeah, stay humble. Stay humble. Stay humble. But all right, y'all. I'm Jeff Nowak. This has been WWL Sports Talk. Cullen Steele. Thanks, everyone. Who dat? I'm out. Be easy, y'all. And we're back on WWL. Let's go through some texts rapid fire before we get out of here. We got 3953. Andy Dalton is now, he's not the Red Rifle. He's the Red Raffle because he's full of giveaways and everyone is a winner. He's also, you know, he also has the winning raffle ticket because he keeps getting starting jobs when he probably doesn't deserve them.
You see that stat about him and Rodgers and about how he's had like 3, since Rodgers' last 300-yard game, Dalton's had 3 of them for 3 different teams.
Yeah, yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
And it's like, you hear that and you're like, I don't know.
He did it for the Saints.
Is that a testament to Dalton's supremacy or Rodgers just not doing much?
Here's the thing. I feel like 300-yard passing games used to be a symbol of this quarterback is playing very well, and now it's a symbol of you probably lost that game. Right? Because it means you couldn't run the ball. It means you were throwing the ball 40-something times and you were trying to come back. Like, it just doesn't, this is not a passing league anymore. It's a passing league when you're behind. It's a passing league when you're bad.
300 is not the new 400.
300 is the new, yeah, there you go. Yep. We also got a text. What happened to the undrafted tight end from Colorado State? Still here. Just not doing much. You know, you have two healthy tight ends. We're gonna keep it going. Man, Kubiak is the difference. For all the Saints fans dreaming of a Lombardi trophy, there's only week two. I remember 1993. Wow. We started 5-0 and finished 8-8. That's tough. That's tough. I don't remember 1993. I was 3 years old.
Staying humble, baby.
Yeah, stay humble. Stay humble. Stay humble. But all right, y'all. I'm Jeff Nowak. This has been WWL Sports Talk. Cullen Steele. Thanks, everyone. Hoot at. I'm out. Be easy, y'all.